Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick. New Mexico's economy is struggling. We have one of the highest poverty rates in the country, anemic job growth, and we rely on a handful of industries for most of our jobs. We also depend heavily on federal spending and on revenues from the oil and gas industry, which have been plummeting recently. There's a new growing focus on entrepreneurs, but there are also things working against new business owners. Today, I'm joined by members of New Mexico First, the nonpartisan organization, held a two-day gathering recently to hammer out strategies around improving the state's economy. The group is now working to implement those goals out of a town hall they held recently. We want to hear from you. You can call 277-5866 or email callinshow@kunm.org. Heather Ballas is Executive Director of New Mexico First. Thank you for joining us, Heather.
Thank you, Megan.
Heather, who took part in this statewide town hall, and why do you think the process can shift the conversation on this topic?
Well, first of all, the people who took part in this town hall came from all over the state. We had over 200 registrants. They came from all six regions of New Mexico. It was a really, really diverse crowd. We were diverse politically, big mix of Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and people who identify with no party. We were diverse geographically, as I mentioned, as well as ethnically. And so what that meant was that people came to the issue from a lot of different perspectives, but everybody was there to talk about what would it take to make New Mexico have the strong, healthy economy we want to have.
Now, this was an organization started by Senator Pete Domenici, Senator Jeff Bingaman, correct, to take a nonpartisan approach to public policy issues. And you've done this many times throughout the years. Have the recommendations that have come out of these, have they been implemented?
They have. If you go to New Mexico First website, nmfirst.org, you'll find a nice long list of policy outcomes from past town halls. But in the most recent legislative session, just last year, there was legislation that passed on teacher licensing that protected the number of credits that teachers need to have in math education in particular. That was a policy initiative we took on behalf of a statewide town hall on STEM education. And similarly, in the last session, on behalf of the statewide water town hall, we took a strong position in support of watershed restoration. So there's other examples I can provide. But the point is that what we find is that when citizens come together in a bipartisan fashion and think about the future they want to see in New Mexico, solid ideas come forward. And we are so fortunate that lawmakers listen to us every time they listen to us.
We also have joining us by phone Richard Luarke. He's the former governor of Laguna Pueblo, and he is on the New Mexico First Board. Governor Luarke, thank you for joining us this morning while you're on the road.
Thank you for having me.
One of the priorities that emerged from this town hall is we must create a thriving rural and tribal economies. How is your community of Laguna working to do that, and what are the challenges that you face?
Well, I think that, you know, many tribal and rural communities, the challenge is always access to capital, access to a market. But in this day and age, you know, we're still also doing strategies that are somewhat archaic in the sense that we're not creating strategies that are built on the digital economy. As we know, a lot of solutions now and services and applications, it's all digital based. Yet we're focused on the brick and mortar type of economies, and part of that though is again the ruralness that creates that challenge and the lack of capital to create the innovations and the types of technology that will allow to participate in the larger market of the information age of where we're at today.
So how do you see your community and other Native communities adapting to the shifting realities here in the economy, including having reduced government spending, which has buoyed New Mexico for many decades, and the related contracts that come with that for small businesses?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that's going to be very, very critical that tribes are going to have to think about is how we do economic creation in this current day and age. Entrepreneurship is something that is talked about pretty strongly in our community in Laguna Pueblo, and I'm sure in other Pueblos, other tribes and nations in the state, with Apache and the Navajo Nation as well. But the dilemma with that scenario is that the tribal government is often the biggest deterrent to entrepreneurship because, you know, the tribes have opportunities like tribal AA status, and they can get things like that in the federal government where and to have an individual company, tribally owned or individual tribal member owned company, compete with that is next to impossible. So I think it's going to be very important for tribes and the community to rethink how we do economic creation. Also, in this day and age, when we begin looking at things like investments, alternative investments, equity, or venture investments, things like that, understanding that, you know, in times past, the tribe, when they did economic creation, really wanted to find ways of making sure they got, if not the whole bucket, the majority of the bucket. But I think that landscape is changing now to really begin to look at how do we become better partners in economic creation.
So you also are seeing young people, they have to leave to go get education out of the rural communities, and maybe they'll come back, and you hope, to help the community. How are you guys dealing with that? And I think this relates actually to New Mexico as a whole. We're losing young people. So,
yeah, you know, and that's a challenging one, but I think it's also one that we need to likewise rethink how we do that, because you're correct. You know, the industries that we have in tribal communities are limited. It's either, you know, government or maybe gaming, if you're from a gaming tribe, those kind of things. But, you know, we have individuals that are getting degrees in various disciplines that are not consistent with the types of industries we have. For example, gaming. For, you know, me as an individual, you know, as a former tribal leader, you know, you learn about gaming and because that's a revenue source for us. But for me as an individual, I'm not interested in gaming. So, you know, my career interests are elsewhere. And I know there's many other kids. So it's a matter of also finding ways of outside of the tribe or outside of the rural communities, where can we place our people or get our people placed that can help back to the tribe, you know, from the outside in. So I think that's a different model that we need to begin thinking about, because like any other government, a tribal government can't hire everybody. And individuals that are hired, currently employed, you know, they tend to stay there for long periods of time, you know, 20, 30 years of employment, and that's great. But that creates the challenge for the younger people of having the opportunity for those types of careers there. So I think it's going to be a statewide conversation, not to your point, not just a tribal conversation as to what do we need to do differently and innovatively to begin to attract our people back. And entrepreneurship, I believe, is going to be a major player in that solution.
So how do you see, Richard Loracki, the role of rural and tribal communities in that wider state economy? As you said, it's not just an issue that Native communities are facing, and we're talking about the whole economy in New Mexico. So do we sometimes see as like, an afterthought, those are tribal communities, but do you see opportunities to tap strengths there, to tap knowledge there that could help the state economy?
Absolutely. You know, I believe that tribes have incredible resources to bring to the table, you know, as a result of gaming, as a result of natural resources. Tribes now have the ability and the opportunity to invest, to partner, to acquire, but also using the status very differently. You know, as sovereign nations, you know, we have 23 sovereigns, the 19 Pueblos, the two Apache nations, the Navajo Nation in New Mexico, in addition to the state. But we don't necessarily use the status of our sovereignty in that manner that will allow for collaborative business scenarios. So, you know, but what I mean by that is, how is it that we might be able to get in partnership a large company or grow our own companies here using the status of sovereignty that the tribes have without having a lot of the regulation. Pharmaceutical is an example. Very heavily regulated industry, right? But if you bring that onto tribal lands or onto trust land, what does that do to the ability to have pharmaceutical companies established here that reduce the cost of meds? You know, we have people, a lot of people with diabetes and high blood pressure, cancer, very serious diseases and illnesses, and those medications are very expensive. So without impacting safety of the of the pharmaceutical, how is it that we can speak statuses as tribal nations to reduce costs? So looking at those types of scenarios that would allow for, I think, very intriguing partnerships.
One of the people leading the effort to make the New Mexico First recommendations a reality is Tom Taylor. He's on the phone with us from Farmington. He was a Republican state representative for 16 years. He was also the mayor of Farmington. Now he's on the board of Four Corners Economic Development. Tom, like Governor Luarke, you are from a more rural part of the state. How is the economy in the Four Corners coping with the downturn in energy prices? And what are one of the priorities maybe that came out of this town hall that might change that? I don't know if you were able to hear Governor Luarke just talking about some of the opportunities as well in rural areas we could tap.
Well, got in on the end of that. Northwest Corners not doing very well. San Juan County is down about 6,000 jobs, lost about 11,000 in population over the last, since 2008. Most of that's been here in the last year and a half. For a long time, we had a lot of oil and gas families who stayed here as the workers in the family went to other places and just commuted. That's started falling apart as those people are deciding to move to other places. So, you know, we have a big challenge here. And the greatest difficulty with it is energy-based jobs tend to be very high-paying jobs. With the closure of the two units at San Juan, that was about 700 megawatts of electricity and about 400 jobs that was lost in that process. If we replace that with a natural gas plant, that would only employ about 30 people. And then, of course, all the way to the other end of the spectrum, solar, you know, basically doesn't employ any. It's got a couple of technicians and some folks that wash the windows and that sort of thing.
Well, we have seen there was a report this week, the Journal, I think this week or last week, talked about how our solar industry is booming. And but you're saying that's not a one-to-one replacement necessarily.
Well, yeah, it's not even close. I mean, and that's the difficulty is that when you're an energy-based economy, you can't replace jobs lost in energy with energy jobs because it just doesn't take as many of them as you move through the spectrum of energy production these days. And the other thing is those mining jobs are about 138,000 a year, including benefits. So it's, you know, basically an impossibility to do that. So obviously our economic development challenge is to scale up local businesses, try and attract some new business into the area. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, taking up 6,000 jobs unless something really changes will take decades.
I want to thank Governor Luarke. I know he is on his way to a business meeting, and so I wanted to let you go. But thank you very much, Governor. I appreciate you joining us this morning.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having me. Everyone have a wonderful day.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're talking about the economy in New Mexico today. What do you think we should be focusing on in New Mexico? What would help us grow and build more jobs here? Join our conversation by calling 277-5866 or email callinshow@kunm.org. We have a call right now from Sarah in Albuquerque, and she's actually talking about the rapid transit project that's been in the news. Sarah, what would you like to say? Sarah, are you there? Nope, we lost Sarah, I think. Okay. I want to jump over to another member of New Mexico First who is helping implement these priorities that the town hall came up with, along with Tom Taylor here in the studio, Bill Garcia. He was the economic development secretary under former Democratic Governor Bruce King. He's remained active in economic development issues, and he leads the board of the New Mexico Highland Universities Foundation. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
Thank you, Megan. Great to be here.
We tend to see Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives, as being split ideologically over economic issues. There's common ground, though, it sounds like. Mr. Taylor's from the Republican side. You're from the more liberal side. Where is that common ground?
I'm more of a moderate, just be sure people understand where I'm coming from. But
you have a lot of people who participated in this process.
Yes, and that's actually true. I want to just step back real quickly and say that this town hall actually addressed two questions. One, what do we need to do in order to diversify and improve our economy? And secondly, How are our families impacted by all of this? So there was a consideration that was very unique here that had, to my knowledge, never been done before in this kind of a study group and responding to that question. So we're looking at how do we advance families and then how do we improve our economy? So we did. There were four key outcomes that, there were many outcomes and recommendations. Let me say that. I'd like to focus on four because they...
Don't do them all at once. Give me a couple top
okay.
ones. We have to go to a break in a minute.
First one is we need to take a look at our current tax system
okay.
and adjust it in a manner that would attract and encourage the development of the kinds of diversified businesses that we like. Okay, so I'd like to see that. I'll give you a second one on the business side, and that would be that we take advantage of the Tier 2 supplier system and focus
that?
On the border.
Okay.
So there's opportunities with the border development that's been done over the last 25, 30 years. A number of maquiladoras on the Mexican side are securing right now from Indiana and Ohio many of their supplies that they use to assemble cars and electrical harnessing and all kinds of different things. Jerry Pacheco, who is one of our noted economic developers on the border, had come up with the idea, and we introduced it in the town hall and discussed it, and the town hall adopted it as one of the recommendations that why don't we establish the ability here in New Mexico to connect with those opportunities on the border, given the distance differences and the advantage of our geographic, is that not an opportunity? Many, many people believe that it is, so that's another one.
Okay, very good. I just want to say, this is the KUNM Call-In Show, and we are talking about the economy. We will be right back after this break.
Right now is the best time for your business announcement to be on KUNM. Why? For one thing, it's a presidential election year, and that always means more listeners. And secondly, KUNM's 50th anniversary is this fall, and there are exciting events coming up that will cause everyone to listen even more closely. Your business or professional office can have an announcement right here in a few days. Call Shanda at 277-3969. That's 277-3969.
If KUNM strikes a special chord with you, donate that old accord to keep the tunes coming. Turn your Beatle into the Beatles. Turn your Altima into the ultimate in great music. Have a Buick Century from the last century donated to us in this century. We accept just about anything with wheels and an engine. To find out if your car qualifies, call 888-KUNM-CAR. It takes just a few minutes. That's 888-KUNM-CAR or 888-586-6227.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're talking about New Mexico's struggling economy today and steps we can take to get it moving again. I'm here with members of New Mexico First. It's a nonpartisan public policy organization that recently held a statewide town hall on this issue. Are you having trouble finding a job? Are you an employer who's struggling to find skilled workers? Call now, 505-277-5866, or email questions or comments to callinshow@kunm.org. I want to go back to our phones. We have Sarah back. She wanted to put in a plug for the Rapid Transit Project's ability to bring jobs.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay. You know what? I had the mute button by accident. But anyways, I do agree with the mayor and the city developers that claim that ART will bring in money to New Mexico. And you know what? I do believe that it will attract more millennial college students to enroll in UNM. And did you know that we had the lowest student enrollment last year ever? And so the university is going to be laying off like 300 university workers. And so, you know, the millennials like walkable public transit, walkable community like wider sidewalks, intersection safety improvement on Central. And you know something, I think the businesses will make more money once the project is completed because it'll be a lot more friendly to pedestrians and bicyclists and people that like to ride public transit. You know, and I know that it's difficult for them to kind of go through this 2 years when they can't be making any money. But when it's completed, it'll be beneficial to all of Albuquerque, to New Mexico, to foreign tourists, tourists from Europe. And I really think that we need to support it.
Okay. Thanks for calling in with that comment, Sarah. Appreciate it. I want to go next to Mountain Air. We have Jan on the line. She wants us to think about diversifying maybe with the recycling industry.
Yeah, Megan, I'm a great proponent of sustainable and alternative energies, and it feels to me often that while there are a lot of people in this state that think very far forward, they're not necessarily the policymakers or not even necessarily included in the think tanks, as they were. I know that there are state-of-the-art plants in the eastern part of the United States that are doing a waste-to-energy conversion, and they are taking all of the trash, pulling out the recyclables, doing what is appropriate with them, finding markets for them, and what cannot be recycled is being converted to energy. And it seems to me that New Mexico is prime place for that. We've got two major interstates going in and out of here where things could be transported to such a plant. We've got railroad infrastructure here that is huge. We could be bringing in trash from other states. And we've got incredible amount of land mass that could be used for sorting and creating an energy generation plant. And we have the electrical infrastructure system. I mean, we're sending all of our wind power to Arizona and California. I just feel like we're trashing the planet, and we could do very good things with that and create an entire energy industry around that in the state. And I can't see that that wouldn't produce a boatload of jobs.
Well, thank you, Jen, for that comment. And Bill wants to chime in on that. Bill Garcia.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent example of an idea that needs to be germinated. The thing that we looked at is what's going to attract that investment, because in order to get that done, you're going to have a big investor to come in and establish all of the machinery and so forth. The transportation systems and so forth will have to bring from where the trash is. A lot of it is at a great distance from New Mexico. But I think it's a great idea. So I would suggest that maybe that one of the things we focus on is included in this whole tax study. What is it that we want to attract? What are the disincentives in our tax policy today? And how do we continue to attract good capital to invest in these great ideas?
You guys have skipped ahead to the wonkiest part of the show. I'm going to go with you and stay with us, people. We're going to talk about the tax structure. And it is interesting. Tom, one thing that always comes up in these questions, the gross receipts tax. Let's not get too wonky. Just explain to us, explain to listeners what it funds and why so many feel it's such a problem.
Well, you know, gross receipts tax is a little different than sales tax. It's the responsibility of the seller to collect the tax rather than the purchaser, which makes it really different from other states. It was done so that we could tax the federal government because of all the labs and everything here. The fact of the matter is that a gross receipts tax is designed to be a very broad-based tax with a very low rate. And over the years, we've managed to continue to whittle away at the base and raise the rate on the taxes. In 2003, when we removed the tax from food and increased the tax on everything else by 0.5%, in the legislature, we were experiencing maybe 10 or 12 bills a year seeking relief from gross receipts tax. Subsequent to that, that number soared to 100 to 120 bills each year. It just becomes very difficult because it pyramids. It's extremely awkward for poor people. It is the main tax that the poor in New Mexico pay. And so every time we raise that tax, the greatest effect on that is two interesting groups of people, it's business and the poor, that really suffer from it. It's in dire need of reform.
And
we need to figure out a way to lower that tax a whole bunch or get rid of it and do something different.
Indeed, the Bureau of Business and Economic Research issued a whole white paper on this. It said that we saw cuts in personal income taxes and capital gains taxes under Bill Richardson, cuts in corporate taxes under Susana Martinez. This means we're relying more and more on gross receipts taxes and oil and gas revenues to fund government operations. But as you say, we've whittled away at the gross receipts tax. Bill, why is that a problem?
Well, it's because we make a number of policy decisions to carve out in order to attract various industries. And so when you do that, then you exempt a portion of your potential tax paying in order to generate additional payroll taxes, stimulate employment, and so forth. So part of the study that we're recommending here would take a look at all of it. We've had a number of studies. This is a difficult political situation and decision for politicians to make. But we believe if we have the expertise of the New Mexico Tax Institute and they work with us and we take a look at what are all our carve-outs today and what is that costing us and how many of those are continue to be needed and kind of refresh that and then take a look at, well, what's an alternative and then map out options. And then the final piece of that in my mind would be let's model those. Let's computer model so we don't have unintended consequences trying to do something good and just exacerbating our problem.
So let me ask you so we understand. Does it mean that fewer people are paying the gross receipts tax, but those who are paying it are paying more, or that fewer products and services are being taxed but at higher rates? Is that the net impact? Or?
Well, today, more and more services and businesses and transactions are being taxed. That's the problem. You hear about pyramiding.
Yeah.
So if you're a manufacturer and you manufacture something, this is without, you know, any changes, you're taxed on the product, then you're taxed when it's sold to somebody. And so it's called pyramiding, and it impacts the ability of any enterprise to really make a profit. We believe, I have heard, that it is probably in our gross receipts tax system incents some of the research capacity in New Mexico in the federal governments to go to other states to look at it doing there because it's cheaper and they don't have to deal with that.
So I have a – oh, go ahead, Heather. I'm sorry.
I was going to say one of the things that also I didn't understand before we began the research associated with this project in particular was that a lot of analysts say that the current GRT structure in New Mexico, it makes poor people poorer, so it has an impact on individual families. But it also has a significant impact on small consulting-type businesses. So if you're someone who doesn't have a great big company and you don't have an in-house accountant or an in-house counsel – you're trying to you have to purchase those services elsewhere. You're paying additional tax just to be able to do that. And so it's one more reason that many small or mid-sized businesses might be more likely to try to go house on the other side of one of our borders instead of inside New Mexico so that you don't have to pay those extra fees.
This is the KUNM call-in show. We're talking about New Mexico's struggling economy. Are you looking for a job right now? Are you a business owner struggling with some of these issues? What can local and state officials do that would make this easier? You can call 277-5866, toll free 866-899-5866, or email callinshow@kunm.org. We're also tweeting us at KUNM News. I was struck by what Tom said, what you both just said, that this hurts businesses and it hurts poor people. I don't hear that very often. I'm struck that you guys looked at – that was one of the issues you wanted to bring up, Bill, one of the priorities.
Yeah. As we looked at families, too, there were two recommendations at least that came out. One was as to deal with eliminating the disincentives to earnings. If anybody is on public assistance today, there's a certain level that they can earn to, and then if you get beyond that, then you lose the benefit. And so – that turns out an unintended consequence of motivating people to not go to work and complete because they would lose needed benefits.
Which
and
is so, understandable.
Yeah, it's understandable. Cliff, right? Yeah, and it's just a contradiction that we need to figure out how to address, and I think that's one of the things. The other would be to focus on early childhood, including pre-K. I think we're learning more and more as you address the whole cycle of poverty. We've got to take a look at early education as one of the key strategies of getting into that.
Tom Taylor from Farmington, how are we going to do these things given we're just about to go to a special session, our budget is looking rather tattered, so how do we do these things?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. When you talk about reforming a tax system, that is a tall order. It requires a tremendous amount of fortitude to do it. Number one, when you have a tax system, what you know about it is only what you know by what people report. For instance, right now in gross receipts, we have a certain amount of business that's reported every year. We have a report on how much tax is taken out of that. And so the state's 5.125% portion of that, the effective rate is only 1.8, but
that doesn't include exemptions. That only includes credits and deductions to the gross receipts tax. It doesn't even include exemptions. So way more than half of the tax we're giving away in credits and deductions. And who knows how much in exemptions. It's very complicated on how you remold that thing without, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
I have a quick...
It's something certainly possible.
I have a quick comment from a listener, Tom. Lori says, we shouldn't be afraid of the word tax. They're investments to build the economy, our education system and infrastructure. And she feels we should tax wealthy New Mexicans more. She's even willing to pay more taxes. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. We've talked about that. Gross receipts and income tax are two different things. You know, right now in New Mexico, 52% of taxpayers don't pay any income tax. Every bit of it is either returned at the end of the year in their returns. So right now, the top 10% of New Mexico, the top 10 of the wealthiest New Mexicans, pay 70% of the tax as it is.
Is that because
so it's always a problem? So people say, well, when you give a tax cut, it's only the rich that get it. Well, it's the rich that are paying most of it. When you're not paying it, it's hard to give somebody a tax cut that isn't paying it. So it's a really strange situation. Plus the fact that when you talk about taxes, you're talking about corporate, gross receipts, income tax, excise taxes, and all of those things. Every one of them are different. They affect people differently. They work together in different ways.
Bill,
so
can I
gonna... use that term?
Bill, is it because so many people are in poverty? Is that why we're talking about not as many people paying taxes?
Well, yeah, I think that's part of it. But the other part of it, let's consider our when I was a cabinet secretary, we got a report out from one of these think tanks that said we were 48th in the nation, blah, blah, blah. And I took a look in taxes. When you look at it objectively, you will find all of the taxes that Tom measured plus the property taxes. Now, we have one of the lowest property tax rates in the entire nation. At the time that I asked for this, I think we were the best. So you've got to look at the range of taxes. There's not a state that provides all the services to its citizens that doesn't have to generate that one way or another. Now, the question I have is, do we have the relative weight of each one of those tax categories correctly weighted? There's a huge balance that needs to come here.
What does that mean? Can you be more specific?
So if we take a look at property taxes, income taxes, gross receipts taxes, compensating tax, I mean, there's a whole host of taxes. Then there's a bunch of exemptions that Tom mentioned.
Right.
So if we look at our entire tax structure, the objective would be to make it more equitable. The objective would be to promote the diversification of our economic base that provides jobs that increase the wealth of any community. And so that's a fundamental idea here that we're trying to get to.
I just want to take a call real quick because Clifton's been waiting a long time from the Independent Business Alliance. He wants to see us shift 10% more of our buying to local business. Clifton, why?
Well, we did a survey. It's been a couple of years now. If everybody took a dime out of every dollar that they spend on their household or their business and then moved that into a locally owned, independently operated business here in New Mexico, and I should say here in the Albuquerque area, that dime from every dollar would amount to $17 million retained every year. Some people call it extra money, and I always like to focus on the fact that it's currently leaving town, so it's not really extra money, but it would be retained. I do also want to say that the gross receipts tax relative to the property tax is kind of regressive, and when the gentleman talks about equalizing the taxes, we might need to consider shifting some of that burden to property taxes, where those folks who have amassed a great deal of property might pay a little bit more taxes. But if we could take that burden off of the folks for whom 7% represents a significant portion of their food budget, that might be a thing to consider. Thank you, Megan.
Thanks, Clifton. I want to go next to Trey and Glorietta. He's a business owner in Santa Fe who says he is overwhelmed by taxes. Are you there, Trey?
Yes, I am. Hi, yeah. In Santa Fe, you know, it's 8.3% plus the time and fees associated with doing it and the terrible computer system that makes it almost impossible for a person to file their own taxes. I've been moved back and forth between monthly and quarterly filings, late fees, all the other associated things. You know, and it works out to over a dime to every dollar, like the gentleman was saying. And combined with state taxes, federal taxes, personal income, works out to, you know, 40 to 50% of your total income. And, you know, that's associated with your filing fees and all the computer programs and things you need. And for a small business owner, that's really overwhelming, which is why a lot of businesses in New Mexico are cash businesses and don't pay any taxes. And the other comment I had was for the Four Corners area. They bet the farm on one crop, which was energy, and the crops failed, and now they're going to lose the farm. And New Mexico has done that as well, and that we were all in on energy and didn't diversify our economy, put caps on the film industry, didn't promote manufacturing or any other industries, and now that it's gone bust, so is the economy. And it's no surprise. I mean, everybody in New Mexico knows how things work, and for some reason we act surprised that without any diversity, you know, we saw our entire economy crumble when the one thing that we bet it all on failed.
Thank you very much, Trey. This is the KUNM call-in show. I'm going to go back to Tom on that real quick, but we have to take a quick break.
KUNM thanks Radio Frequency Club members Thomas and Amber Whitaker of Albuquerque and Adolphine Carroll of Tome for their monthly contributions. You, too, can support KUNM at KUNM.org.
If KUNM strikes a special chord with you, donate that old accord to keep the tunes coming. Turn your Beatle into the Beatles. Turn your Altima into the ultimate in great music. Have a Buick Century from the last century donated to us in this century. We accept just about anything with wheels and an engine. To find out if your car qualifies, call 888-KUNM-CAR. It takes just a few minutes. That's 888-KUNM-CAR or 888-586-6227.
This week on This American Life, a dealer just fled Syria, came across on one of those little boats into Europe. Then the border closed. Her whole life was in flux. So, of course, she met somebody.
The situation is not appropriate. Obviously, I'm a refugee. He's a refugee. But suddenly, I fell in love with him, and I want to be with him.
Her family opposed it. A Romeo and Juliet love story this week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM call-in show. There's still time to join our conversation by calling 277-5866 or emailing callinshow@kunm.org. What are you experiencing right now in the economy and the job market? What would you like to see state and local officials focus on? Are you trying to hire workers right now? Tom, I want to jump back to you. So you bet everything on one crop. Easier to say let's diversify than do it. So how do we do that?
You know, I've been in elected office 32 years or have been involved in economic development the whole time, the whole goal of that being to diversify an economy. It is very, very hard to do, especially due to the fact that, you know, we get used to the fact there are booms and busts. And we've had several of them in the Four Corners area. And actually, Farmington itself has diversified in one way in that we've become a retail center for about a 300,000 population service territory. So we have a lot of service industry jobs. Unfortunately, it's a lot of big box stores. And so, you know, most of the profits, all of the profits leave the community.
As Clifton was saying, right?
Trying to diversify is very, very difficult to do because it's hard to match the high-paying jobs that are there. It's difficult.
Clifton was saying that you're shopping at a national retailer, more of your money leaves the community rather than a local retailer. So trying to build that small business space. I do want to circle back to you, Tom, because you brought this up before when we were talking about the cliff effect, because I think it's really interesting that you all addressed this in an economic development scenario when you're talking about families in poverty and why that's part of an economic development discussion. So what could we do to address that cliff effect since we're talking about a federal policy?
You know, basically what we do is we incentivize poverty because, if you're making minimum wage and you're taking a lot of benefits being supplied by the state and the federal government, as you make more money, you lose those benefits. In some cases, you actually lose income because of the cliff effect. But the fact of the matter is you've got to get to around $40,000 to $43,000 a year before you put another dime in your pocket. And so some way we have to do away with the cliffs. We have to provide a system where you lose benefits, but you don't lose them at such a rate that it matches. You've got to be growing in your opportunity as you go through those different stages of support from the government. We have to incentivize you to make more money.
Heather,
you know, the talk about minimum wage, if we do that in a vacuum, a whole bunch of people just lose their Medicaid. And so we haven't done anything. So it's important to really address that problem. And it's a national problem, not just a state problem.
Heather, that's true. I think Paul Ryan has brought this up as well, that cliff effect. So I think it's interesting because in the past, ideologically, we haven't necessarily heard folks on the Republican side talking about that. So what did you want to add?
Well, that I think that there's a handful of different ways that people talk about this issue. And we had a lot of different perspectives at the town hall around what are we doing as a state to really support the families that are in poverty and the families that are having those experiences, how they can move away from that. And so when we think about the structure of the benefits, as Tom was just mentioning, some folks, I think, would have probably characterized it much the way Tom just did. Some wouldn't say that we're incentivizing poverty as much as they're saying that we're just making it really hard for people who are in that structure to move out of it. Regardless what position you're coming from or what perspective, the important thing is if I'm a single mom and I'm trying to take care of two kids and I've got personal ambition, I want to make progress with my life. Let's say I take a $3 an hour increase from a raise in my job. If that $3 an hour raise costs me $8 or $10 in terms of benefits that I need to take care of my family, I'm going to take care of my family first, even if I have those personal ambitions and I want to change my situation. And so the opportunity to really research what causes those cliffs to happen and what we can do at a state level or at a federal level to level those out so that when you earn a little more, you lose a little bit, but you don't lose a lot just because you're trying to change your own personal, economic, or professional situation.
We are talking about the economy here on the Call-In Show. We're talking about the economy in New Mexico. We're lagging much of the rest of the country. I want to add in another person at this moment. We're going to go to Mark Lautman. He has a long history of economic development in New Mexico over several decades. More recently, he is on the State Jobs Council. Mark, are you with us?
I am.
Mark, the Jobs Council says we need to create 14,000 jobs every year for the next 10 years to get back to pre-recession levels of employment. And you focused on broadband infrastructure and rapid workforce development training among these things. Why those things? Why? How is that going to get us to that goal?
Well, you know, any job creation ambitions, whether at the local level or the state level, have to match your workforce. So you can't create jobs that you don't have qualified people for. And so it's ironic, really, that in a recession, and we're kind of last out of the recession, that the biggest impediment to job creation in most communities in New Mexico is there's not enough qualified workers. So you have this kind of odd scenario where you don't have jobs, your jobs are either eroding or aren't growing as fast as you need, and then you have a population that doesn't have the skill sets. And adding to the skills mismatch is, so you have employers that on one hand complaining that they can't find qualified workers, and the other side you have rising unemployment. And part of it is this phantom workforce concept where you have a lot of people in your community who either lack the skills or the bridge from public assistance. And if you're at home making $7.50 an hour on public assistance, you're not there because of the things that you lose when you get a job and start making money. You have to make $15 or $16, maybe even $20 an hour before you're making more than you were at home on public assistance. And they call that's what the cliff effects are.
So how do you address that? Do you train? Do you attract an employer and then specifically train for those jobs? I mean, it's like a chicken and egg thing, right?
All of this stuff is chicken and egg. But I think one thing you could do, as Tom was mentioning, is you can look at these cliff effects and see where the benefits drop off and leave a person worse off than they were before they got their raise, and you can feather the reduction in public support so that's gradual and not abrupt. The other is you've got to have a good read on what kind of jobs are going to be in demand in the next 5 years, so you can start upskilling the people that are in your market, so you have a workforce that's skilled up to do the jobs that are going to grow. And the problem right now is New Mexico's economy is transforming in a fundamental way, where you're losing the energy and extractive industry jobs. We've had a huge hit in the federal sector, and manufacturing's been going down. Ag's been mechanized, and so and the grocery receipts tax is being eroded by companies like Amazon, where, you know, we've got people shopping on the internet, that a lot of it's going untaxed. And so the way that we, you know, tax ourselves and fund our tax dependent institutions, all this really needs to be rethought in light of what the economy is going to be like the next 15 to 20 years, which is really different than it has been the last 50.
I want to take a comment real quick from a listener. Alex says he's an architect in Taos, and that publicly bid projects often go to out-of-state firms, which, to paraphrase, that eliminates local knowledge, local jobs, and the benefits of local networks, and it's more expensive. And I think we have a caller who also wants to say something along those lines, John in Santa Fe, about most state funds being invested out of state. Are you there, John?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. This discussion is fascinating. I did, one of your previous calls mentioned, I think is interesting, we put a cap on the film industry, which is one of the bright spots. The program is clearly working, and that's something we need to come back and reexamine. But I wanted to mention that our managed funds, our permanent funds, ERA, PRA, our pension funds, are almost exclusively invested out of state. And so we are creating jobs, but we're just creating jobs in Carolina, where the banks are, where we hold our money, and on Wall Street, where they're spending our money in things that perhaps New Mexicans would be ashamed of if we knew where our money was going. But we're putting more money into China than we are into Chama. And we really need to come back and visit that. And what I keep hearing is the Constitution says we've got to invest for the maximum return. We have to take the economic development return of our funds, or at least a proportion of our funds, so we can include that in our calculations. And I understand that a lot of money comes with education from these funds, but it doesn't mean that with the massive amount of money we have the 16th biggest sovereign wealth fund in the world here in New Mexico. With the massive amounts of money we have between our retirement funds and our permanent funds, that we can't take a small proportion and say we're going to invest this in New Mexico. So at least we have capital available when people want to set up business.
Bill, to that point, I don't know if this is what you wanted to say, but we have a listener who says we should be investing more in education, in early childhood education. You just talked about the land grant.
There's a balance here that we have to have. Yeah. We have to have enough taxes to support the families that we have in the state, but you have to have a tax structure that attracts businesses and allows them to grow and flourish. And so that's the fundamental question that we're looking at here. As far as the state investing, the state does, as the caller said, it's got the responsibility of generating the greatest revenue possible, because that does go to fund state operations. On the other hand, to their credit, the state has carved out a portion of the investment funds and developed what they call a venture capital fund, and they partner with other venture capital groups here. Venture capital, by the way, is a great way to start the IntelliSists of New Mexico that want to be here. They're going to have – these are success stories, and we've got to look at how do we capture more of those.
I want to go to Eric real quick, because I think his comment relates to this discussion. Eric, what did you want to say about marketing the state? Eric, are you there? Well, I think he wanted to say that the administration doesn't have a marketing plan to push the local economy or the state economy. And Mark, I know that has been something you've talked about as well, that we need to be investing, I guess, spending money if we want to make money.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfair to say that the state doesn't have a plan and that they're not spending money. They are. It's just it looks like it's way out of scale with what's required. So if you look at how many, you know, and there's like eight program theaters that you could conceivably create economic-based jobs with.
And what are economic-based jobs, Mark?
Economic-based jobs are jobs where the products and services produced are sold outside the economy. So the salaries are being paid for by people outside the state. That brings money in and grows the state economic pie. The other jobs are jobs where products and services are sold to local residents. And if it wasn't for the distinction, you could solve all your unemployment problems by opening up 10,000 laundromats. So economic development focuses first and foremost on these economic-based jobs, which actually grow the economy.
What did you want to say, Heather? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say that one of the questions was, does the state have a plan? And Mark is saying, yep, we do. One of the issues that came out of the town hall repeatedly in the discussion around small business and also in the group of people who were focusing on rural and tribal communities is that there seems to be a sense that the system is fragmented, that the state has a handful of programs and not everybody knows how those programs intersect. The feds have their set of programs, and the intersection between the federal dollars and the state is also not super clear. And then we have a lot of communities that are doing great work in terms of their local chambers or their local economic development organizations. But again, those folks aren't necessarily cued in. So if we accomplished nothing besides a better alignment between these currently separate economic development systems, we'd make a whole lot of progress, in my view, and as referenced in at least four of the specific strategies that were identified at the consensus-based town hall.
Yes, Bill.
Real quick, I understand, and Mark said it right. He said we're in a transformation right now. We learned with the recession that one of our problems was that we depend so much on the federal laboratories that when the federal government cut back and didn't come back very quickly, we lag now in total job development. And so it begs the question then of, okay, if we all agree we need to diversify, what do we need to diversify to? Fundamental to that is an understanding of our tax structure and a study of that to determine what do we need to change in order to attract the kind of new industry that will diversify our economy.
I have one more caller I want to get in real quick. Just a second, Mark. Richard from Albuquerque, just real quickly, what's your comment?
Yes, hi. That was a nice segue to tax policy. The state's having a lot of difficulty funding itself right now with the decline in energy prices. I would like to suggest putting a 5 or 10 cent tax on gasoline that would be indexed if the price of gasoline did go up, which seems kind of unlikely. The tax would go down because the revenues would be up. I see 5 or 10 cents difference in gas or more in town between gas stations, and gas goes up 5 or 10 cents in a few days. It seems like drivers could easily handle a 5 or 10 cent increase in the price of relatively inexpensive gasoline to fund the state.
Real quick, Tom, we're just about to head out, but that impacts probably your region more than anyone else. What do you say to that?
Well, number one, our gasoline tax is a little archaic because it's a set number per gallon rather than a percentage. So it doesn't matter what the price is, we still get our 17 cents. That's something that needs to be looked at. The other thing that I think is an important point here is that there's a lot we could do in economic development in the state. But our state spends less on economic development than the city of Amarillo, Texas. We need to move the decimal point on spending in economic development from $13 million to, $60, $70 million a year at least for communities and regions to even have a chance in this case.
Okay. Real quick, Heather.
I know that we're wrapping up, but I wanted to just remind your listeners that what this discussion has profiled is the fact that we as New Mexicans can absolutely come together across party lines to solve the problems that we're facing. We don't have to perceive ourselves as a nation divided or a state divided. Common sense people can come together and work and solve the problems that'll move us forward.
Thank you so much for my guest today in the KUNM Call-In Show, Heather Ballas with New Mexico First, former Representative Tom Taylor with Four Corners Economic Development, former Laguna Pueblo Governor Richard Lewarke, Bill Garcia, former Economic Development Secretary with the state, and on the phone, Mark Lautman. We'll post the audio of the show online at KUNM.org. There's also a list of resources there, including the New Mexico First Report. Next week on the KUNM Call-In Show, we'll look at efforts to require employers to provide sick leave for New Mexico workers. Will the issue be on the ballot in November? That's next week on the KUNM Call-In Show here on 89.9 KUNM.